The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazaar. Bazaar. Bazaar.
Bazaar. Bazaar. Bazaar. Bazaar. Bazaar.
This is Bazong, the Bazaar, and we are Fiction Podcast with me, your host, Mr. Frank Zongers. Good day to you. Thanks for joining us once again on the Big Bazong Podcast. Yes, indeed. Of course, we got to get right into it and get it out of the way. Our sponsor for this week is, as always, the good folks at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Zongers! Are you into cosplay, corsetry, steampunk, gothic, or rockabilly clothing, shoes, and accessories? Then you must visit Subculture Corsets and Clothing, either online at www.subculturecorsets.com or drop by their store at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located just a half mile off of I-95. Tell them you heard their ad on the Project Entertainment Network and Bazong and receive a 10% discount off your entire purchase. Or when checking out on their website, use the discount code Bazong and receive a 10% discount off your entire order, Zongers. Not just one item, your entire order. So the more you buy, the more you save. Are you a full-figured gal or guy or alien? Don't worry, Subculture has you covered. They carry sizes 4 through 4X. That's subculturecorsets.com. Use the discount code Bazong and receive a 10% off discount. Go ahead and check out their website now, subculturecorsets.com. Or when traveling through Jacksonville, Florida, stop in and check out their store at the Avenues Mall. Yeah! Nobody's taking me up on that long sleeve frilly shirt, the Cooper long sleeve. Nobody's taking me up on the challenge. It's still open. Yeah. So we move on, Zongers, and get to this week's guest. Wow. Blown away by this week's guest. First of all, just to have her come onto the podcast and do an interview is humbling for me. And then having the conversation for, wow, we went over an hour this week in this interview. So much great information. I just couldn't turn off the mics. I had to let her keep going, keep spewing out her brilliance. She was just a delight. I'm talking about none other than the author of the just-released Angel Meat. Miss Loralee Barr is the guest this week on Bazong. That's right, the Wonderland Book of the Year Award winner for her book, Haunt. Joins us this week on the podcast. We talk about all her writing, her approaches, her version, her brand of Bizarro. And we get a really good discussion about marketing and selling overseas, marketing and selling right here in the good old U.S. of A. As her last name would lend, she's open to doing bar crawls. Get it, Loralee Barr crawls. Yeah, we're going there. It's going to be that kind of episode this week, Zongers. So I won't hold you back any further, since we got a long way to go with Ms. Barr. This week on Bazong, let's give her a rip and give us the gong. It is my honor to welcome to the podcast this week a multifaceted, multi-talented writer and author, and she's just wonderful, and a pleasure to have her on Bazong this week. Welcome to the show, Ms. Loralee Barr. Welcome to Bazong.
It is a pleasure to be here.
And I have to add that you are a Wonderland Book of the Year Award winner as well.
Yes.
So we'll.
But you don't have to add it, but I appreciate that you do.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
I bet it is. And we'll touch on all that first. But, I want to ask you, just to start things off here, I want to know how you would classify your version of Bizarro.
Do you mean myself as a writer, or what I think Bizarro is?
Well, let's ask about you as a writer, your brand. What is your brand of Bizarro?
Well, all of the books that have been published in the Bizarro world have been under Fungasm, with Fungasm Press. And I would say in the Bizarro world, I definitely fall right into the Fungasm line. So Fungasm is... It still takes place mostly in the world that many of us know, but it has things about it that are just slightly in another dimension, in slightly skewed or greatly skewed. But it still is, it's bizarro, but it's a mirror image that has a more true representation, and you may be looking at that mirror and then be surprised when your head turns into, you know, a bird. But for the most part, you had a true reflection until it got that bird beak. You know, it's much more in the vein of the real world. But it still is... in an Alice in, I guess an Alice in Wonderland kind of falls kind of close. So,
oh, that's an interesting take. I enjoy asking the Fungasm authors, especially that question, because I interviewed Skip, and he, one of my favorite answers to the question, "What is Bizarro to you?" is he basically said, "I don't know what Bizarro is, but I know it when I see it."
That's like the definition of pornography, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't.
There was a senator who gave that. That was his definition of pornography.
So yeah, and that's, but that Alice in Wonderland, that's there's a reality base to, is what you're saying. There's a real world reality base to it, but then it just, like you said, it's through the looking glass, something changes slightly.
Yeah. Haunt, you know, there's like parallel realities, but for the most part, it's everything happens on this planet. I mean, there are some other interplanetary travels, but otherwise, you know, it takes place mostly here.
I think when I look at, you know, where Bizarro goes, sometimes I look at it in the scope of like the physics of it. You know what I mean? Like, is it really like just not, none of the rules apply, or a lot of the rules apply of our, you know, our physical world. And I think that's sort of how I gauge, you know, the world of the Bizarro story that's taking place.
You know, I think probably I like Skip's definition of I know it when I see it. And the thing I like about it is, to me, Bizarro, and this is not necessarily my work, but I feel like the genre itself is an equivalent to sort of punk rock, or in a way it has its own ethos. Mm-hmm. And that's what defines it, but not any, it basically becomes the vehicle through which these artists who are not playing everyone else's game, they're doing something completely different. So it's outside of the other games, but it's every game outside of that. It's all sorts of things. I mean, the things that classify as, I don't think it's even its own classification. I also liked the, you know, the cult section of the video store. If you wanted to give it a video store, it's like the sort of thing that people, it's just too weird to fall into any other category. Yeah. So it becomes its own category.
I think another line Skip gave me was, Bizarro is what happens when a genre takes off its pants at a party. Yeah.
Sticks its dick in the mashed potatoes.
Yeah. That's a good one, too. Yeah, it's
I didn't come up with that. That's a quote. But
what I noticed sort of too about at least your brand too is you sort of have a leaning towards, your style is like mystery. Is that fair?
Yeah. To me, the most satisfying construct to a story, any story or anything that you're learning, is a mystery, because it gives you it gives you a challenge. It gives you something to solve. It gives you a way to approach it. And it is, to me, also the life itself. You know, we all are, you know, here trying to figure out why. What the hell are we doing here? Oh my God. So we all have, you know, our different ways of answering that question. But a story, a good story, gives you a way to answer that. And you can find your way to a sense of meaning and purpose through trying to answer what that construct gives you. I love mysteries, thrillers, noir, that kind of, that genre. It just is so delicious to me.
And maybe because a lot of your stuff is very horror bent too, it's almost like you're like a grown-up bizarro Scooby-Doo.
Oh, that's the best compliment ever. Thank you so much. In fact, I think about this, a lot of my friends, they don't make fun of me. It's like more of a joke between us now. I have trouble, like when I'm doing a show, if I'm in a play or something, I always have trouble saying goodbye to the show. Mm-hmm. So I always have these ideas of, you know, hey guys, we should get a van together and we should take this show on the road, or we should get together and we should go to different towns and do the show and solve mysteries. And, I love Scooby-Doo. I want a mystery van. I think I'm Velma more than Scooby, or maybe I'm Fred. What if I were Fred?
Yeah, you're getting the gang all together, rounding them up, leading the troops into battle.
The Ascot? Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Maybe I want to be Fred. He's kind of a square, but, you know, whatevs. He drives.
Oh, Fred's not a square. He's fun. He's just too full of himself. You know, I've researching you too. You know, you don't just do books. You have some movie writing credits also to your name.
Yeah. Yes. I actually did when I was a child. The very first thing I wanted to be was a writer. And then somewhere along the way, I think when I hit like middle school, I was like, oh, nobody's writing anymore. You know, that was that has disappeared. Like, people aren't writers anymore. And I quickly gave that up. Well, not quickly. I'd spent years trying to get good at it. But as a dream. And when I wrote Haunt initially, I just did it to do it, but I didn't have any expectation that anything would actually truly come of it. So I have spent a lot of my adult life doing something even more improbable, which is pursuing movies. I wrote and starred in a couple of features, and this past, in 2015, my debut as a writer-director was released. So, I've spent a lot of time in the independent cinema world.
Now, did you do that in conjunction with your, you know, novel writing stuff, or was that a phase for you? I mean, they kind of overlap, it looks like, but your books and movie writing credits.
Definitely. They definitely overlap. A lot of long-form religious porn, and Skip actually noticed this about long-form religious porn and Boned are nice companion pieces. They're very different, but you can kind of construct my life at the time if you looked at those two as entities together. They happen at the same time. Although I took a break from movies for about 6 years, I would say, and focused on theater, and that's when I started really writing novels and short stories. But I've gotten back into cinema in the past couple of years.
It's calling you back.
Yeah.
Did you, when you started, I mean, obviously you started with writing the movies. Was that, is that your, your intention? You wanted to write for movies, or did you just want to be a writer?
No, actually, I started writing movies because as an actor, when I first moved out to Los Angeles, I was really struggling with the roles that were available. They all seemed so, they were not what I had thought of, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I started writing movies as a vehicle for the characters that I wanted to play. And, so that's when I started writing movies, but, I identified very much as an actor back then when I started doing it. And, but I love writing screenplays, but it's a very different writing process than novels. And I would have to say writing novels and short stories is so satisfying. It's painful doing it, but when it is done, the satisfaction element is complete. Whereas in movies, the satisfaction element is always just not quite attainable. You're always like, wait, but I wanted, you know, a lot of, when you're writing a screenplay, I feel like a lot of times you're just putting down a blueprint of what you think the movie will be or should be. And then the reality of creating it shifts it and changes it and becomes maybe better than what you initially wrote and envisioned, or maybe just something completely different. But I got into writing screenplays as an actor, and I got into writing novels as a soul. I am from the time I was from the time I was conscious, I've always been a writer, pretty much. It's who I am.
Did you ever have or get any sort of formal training or take classes for the writing, or was it just you had that skill and you honed it for yourself?
I can remember being very young and being very frustrated that I didn't yet know how to read. And so I learned to read long before, you know, they teach you in school. So I was reading voraciously, you know, since I was probably 6 or 7, you know, so I was reading a lot and writing as well. You know, I was writing poems, I was writing stories. I tried to write my first novel when I was, I think, 10. You know, I got a typewriter and I was like sitting there, like trying to get this novel that I was about this little dog who was called Foundling. And he went through so many sad, sad adventures till he finally found the home of his dreams. So I was writing from the time I was very young. And it was a choice of mine. I don't think I've ever had a formal writing class. I think everything I've learned about writing, I've learned from reading. But the best thing, I've had a lot of friends through my life who have been excellent writers, and we would, you know, critique each other's work. And sometimes, especially in high school, I had a wonderful group of friends, and we would share writing, and they were harsh. They were harsh, harsh, harsh. So I learned a lot from just working it and working it and working it. And when I finally finished a draft of Haunt that I felt truly proud of, the advice that I gave myself to get there was, what do I want to read? What would I, as a reader, what would make me want to keep turning the pages?
Gotcha. And is movies how you wound up working with Skip and Fungasm? Did you meet him through movies?
Kind of, yeah. I met him at an audition. He was auditioning for a music video he was directing. And I had a friend who posted about the audition he was having, and I drove, and it was one of those moments where I was like, ugh, it's far away. Do I really want to drive out to that audition? And then I did, and bummed a smoke off his daughter. and quickly was like, oh, this guy, finally I meet you again in this lifetime. Yeah, so we've been friends ever since.
And how did it come up that you were dabbling in writing and he took an interest?
At that point, I mean, when we met, I had already written and starred in a feature film. So I had already worked as a screenwriter, but I did not express interest in writing novels or short stories. In fact, I didn't know anyone who did that. So Skip was the first person I met who was an actual a novel writer. Mm-hmm. And and we worked together on a couple of concepts for movies, but no, I didn't talk to him about writing a novel until I think I handed him Haunt a few, years later and asked him for advice about where to send it.
Oh, interesting. So it wasn't like he's like, oh, you're a writer and took the book. And I mean, because am I wrong? Is Haunt like the first thing he put out from Fungasm? Or it's definitely
yes,
one of the first.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big win. He puts it out and it's a huge, a lasting classic bizarro book. And obviously, as we said before, winner of the Wonderland Book of the Year Award. But this is you had a relationship with him for some time before Haunt actually came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, it was interesting. I gave it to him as a friend and for advice. Like, what do you think? Like, where should I send this? What should I do with this? And he called me and he said, listen. I know what I think you should do with this. And I think that you should, here are the pros and cons, but I think you should put it out through in the bizarro world. And then he formed Fungasm Press to do that. So, so it was really cool and really exciting, but definitely not planned that way.
That's interesting. So you're responsible for Fungasm Press, essentially.
Well, the Skip is, and Rose is. Ah. Yes, it's all me.
Yeah, there you go. Take a little bit of credit for it, for sure. I mean, fantastic book, obviously. Tons of accolades for it. It's still, I still see people recommending it to this day. So it's got just... It's a classic, I guess, is the best way I can put it. What was it like, did you feel that when you wrote it? Like, this is really something special that I have here? Or, is it like any other book for you?
No. Oh, well, no. I felt like, it's interesting. When I first, I wrote it twice. The first time I wrote it, I drove out to New Mexico and I stayed with my mom, and I was going through a really hard time in my life, and I it was my excuse to kind of get out of where I was for a while. And I had all these slips of paper. I kept it. It was, the idea was, I was like, I'm writing a choose your own adventure book for adults. And it was in a big paper bag filled with things I'd written in various forms in various places, and that I just put together and brought with me, and emails, and I printed all anyway. So I had this bag of notes, and then I taped out the structure of it, and I started writing it. And my mom would be on the computer till sometimes 12 at night. Or one or two in the morning, and then I would get on the computer after she was done. My mom went through a big video game phase, so she was up playing video games, and then I would get on the computer and write at night. So I'd be alone. Well, she would be asleep, but I would be. It was just me and her in her house, and I would be, writing this book. And it started to really scare me at times when I was writing it, you know, there in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico. And I went through parts where I was like, this book is bad, not bad, like bad writing, but bad, like it's got dark energy and it's got like, it's a dark book. And, I don't know. I maybe shouldn't, you know, I should maybe burn it or I should do something. So as I was writing it, it had a lot of different energy. And when I actually finished it and brought it home, I showed a few of my friends and I, got some feedback, but for the most part, I just put it in a box and didn't look at it for a few years. And it was really interesting. I actually said to one of my dear friends, Maddie, I said, something about like, do you think that it's got really, like, it's really dark, right? It's like, really, like, do you think, I don't know if it brings good energy. And he said, Laura, it's funny you should say that. When I read that, all I feel is light, like so much light coming from it. And I was like, oh, that's great. Okay. And, I kept it around and I didn't know what to do with it. And I just kind of forgot about it. And when I went back in to it, I went back in because I'd finished, this really monumental task of writing a master's thesis, which just sucked. Mm-hmm. And I realized if I could do that, I could do the really painful work on Haunt to make it something that I wanted, that I thought would be something I would want to read. Mm-hmm. And so then I went back in and just did some real surgery. And when I finished, when I knew that it was what it needed to be, I felt I didn't know what would become of it. Hmm. And my goal for it was just to let it, just to try and put it out there and see what would happen to it.
I see.
I had no sense of people are going to love this at all. So
were you aware of Bizarro as a genre when you were writing it?
No.
So the weirdness of it, the differentness of it that's just something that comes out of you naturally.
I'm just weird. Yeah. It's really great when you realize how weird you are. It's really great when you realize there's a bunch of you out there. Like, oh, we're everywhere.
Yeah. I hear that so often when I do these interviews, everybody's, they're writing these things, they're getting rejected. People don't understand what the heck this stuff is until finally they shop it around so much. They stumble across somebody who understands what Bizarro is and takes it in, and it opens up a world to, like you said, my people, my tribe, my family. Here's where everybody gets this sort of crazy, this left of center crazy.
Yeah, and it's when I was a couple summers ago, I went to Spain because Haunt was translated into Spanish by Orsini Press. And so I went there for its release, and it was so wonderful to be there. And when I was there and I was looking at the people who came to the event and the people who came, you know, to the readings, I realized that we're all over the world. We're everywhere. There, you can just tell there. You know, every they were all my friends in black with the tattoos. There were, you know, in Spain. I didn't. It's like they all conglomerated, and then those. Oh, there's my people. There they are. In Spanish, Hugo was telling me like Bizarro has this connotation of courage. You know, of being courageous, which I just love. And so, yeah, so he's put out this Welcome to Bizarro collection where he's, you know, done all these collected different bizarro artists and writers, and put together a collection for people in Spain and for Spanish readers. And it's just so cool watching it grow. Oh, and there was one years ago. What's that? There was one that came out in Poland too. Mm-hmm. There was a collection that came out in Poland that I was part of that they used Blue Velvet Cake for. So I have a Polish book, a book that's written of a bizarro collection. It's just it's everywhere, and that really it really tells you how exciting it is to be a writer and a reader right now, because it is a very cool, it's a cool literary movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's something new, and it's expanding at a great rate. Like I said, I was talking earlier to you off mic about, the opportunities I've had to interview writers outside of the United States, and they're everywhere. And I just recently stumbled across Twitter, where there is and I'll bring it up now because you were just talking about it. There's like a Spanish bizarro club appreciation thing. And I just saw they put out a bizarro anthology called Bienvenidos al Bizarro. And
that's the one I'm talking about.
That's the one. Yeah. And oh my God, everybody's in it. How much do you know about? I'm so interested in this because it's Spanish, so it needed translation and everything. Is it just one guy who just loves it so much and he took on the translation? What's going on over there with Spain and his book?
Well, okay, so Hugo contacted me and Skip a few years back. He'd read Haunt. Tamara Romero, she was part of the New Bizarro author series. She wrote a book called Her Fingers. So when Haunt came out, she was in the New Bizarro author set and there at BizarroCon. I guess she got Haunt there, and she read it, and she gave it to Hugo in Spain, and he loved it. And he decided that what he wanted to do was publish it and bring it to Spanish audiences. So he contacted Skip first, and then he contacted me, and we discussed it, and it became clear to me very quickly that that what he wanted to do was so cool and so wonderful, not just with Haunt, because he really understood, he really got it. And he really got how he really got things about it that are not easy to get. And you know this when you're doing a translation, the word is very important because it changes. You know, depending on a translation, it's almost like you are rewriting the book, and it there's a level of poetry to it that you getting what that is to make it a faithful translation, because it can't. So when we were discussing it, I understood just how much he got the spirit of Haunt. But I'm getting a little cheesy. He got the ghost of Haunt, the spirit of Haunt. He really understood. And from there, but his goal was to start with Haunt, but then to bring the whole bizarro scene out there to really start to start bizarro Spain. And he's done that. He's doing that. And he published Carlton Mellick's book. He published Jeremy Robert Johnson's book. He's been publishing and bringing all these wonderful bizarro books there. And so this collection is his way of introducing readers to all the all these different bizarro authors.
So it's almost he's basically getting like the Spanish word rights to these bizarro stories and republishing them in Spanish, bringing bizarro to Spain. Is that really what this is? Hugo Camacho. I just want to point out his name.
Yeah.
Hugo Camacho. And I was blown away. Like I said, I interviewed Kevin Donaghy. He was telling me how he went to Amsterdam and they had a big thing there with Bizarro, and there was like a movement going on there. Obviously, I've talked to people in England and Scotland, and to me, to see the, you know, actual translation going on from English in Spain, that's huge to me. And to see, you know, and to see all these writers, like in this Bienvenuto al Bizarro, you got Garrett Cook, yourself, you got Robert Devereaux, Jeremy Robert Johnson, Violet Lavoie, Carlton Mellick, like it's all who's who of Bizarro. Everybody's on board and behind expanding this over shores across languages. And I guess you all really put your faith in Hugo to give a faithful translation. Like you said, it. And I got to imagine, especially with Bizarro, you have to be careful with the translate. You can't just plug it into Google Translate and get the right thing.
Right. Well, and you can see, like, so Fantasma, which is the Spanish version of Hunt, mm-hmm. It was nominated for two very prestigious Best Translated Novel Awards last year.
Oh, wow.
So his translation was so good that, you know, people... big critical literary sets recognized his work. So he's a wonderful translator. He's a, you know, he's a wonderful writer.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's, there's gotta be a lot of faith, because unless you really are confident in your own knowledge of Spanish, you're handing it over to him. And like you said, it's almost a rewrite of the book in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So you really have to to trust the person you're handing that over to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did. Yeah. And I, it wasn't blind faith. I mean, he did like sample chapters and mm-hmm. things like that mm-hmm. and things like that. So, you know, I knew going into it that he was amazing. That I was lucky to have him. I had a feeling. I was like, oh yeah, sure. I guess you can do that. I was like, yes.
And how about the return on the work that he's doing there? And are you seeing a lot of, you know, action coming out of Spain? A lot of people, you know, coming back to you, trying to reach out to you. What's been the reaction so far?
Well, so I mean, my goal, if I could have my wish, it would be like, you know, I would be so huge over there that, like, I'd have to go live there because I love it so much. Yeah. I loved being there. It was so cool. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on and on about the places in Spain and how wonderful they are. And my favorite, of course, was the food. It was so good.
Oh, yeah.
And the Spanish wine and the countryside. And yeah. So, but, as far as like action is concerned, it is, I would say I'm getting as much action from Spain as I do here. So, I mean, it's, I see a lot of, lots of people contact me, are, you know, things as for independent booksellers, we do just fine. And you know, yeah, so it's definitely a very, real, I hate to use like stupid capitalist terms. It's a real market for me. Mm-hmm. I really like it as am finding a lot of love there, I guess is the best place to put it. I feel very, appreciated.
That's, I mean, if it grabs it, it's almost like a second life or a third life, you know, for the books, because, you know, you can't, the book's been out for, you know, 5 or 6 years, you know, how much are you going to really get? But when you put something out in a translated to Spanish or Polish or what have you, Italian, it's like a second life for the book. It's a brand new audience who might not necessarily have had access to that story before. So to see that grow.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, he's also gonna, in the last couple months, he's going to actually put out long form religious porn as well. So
I'm
very excited about that.
That's well. There's my follow up question. We're going to keep putting it out there. That's awesome. I'm glad you brought up long form religious porn. That was, I guess we could call that your follow up to Haunt.
It's not really a follow. I mean, it's my second novel.
Yeah.
But in a way, it's almost. almost like my first novel because really? Haunt is so weird in terms of I knew after finishing it that I could never write a book like it again because it was almost like I was two different writers the first time writing it and editing it. I had changed so much between those times, not just personally, but as a writer. So in a way, writing long form was, it was like inventing the wheel for the first time, and it took forever. It's a really short book, but oh my God, it felt so long. It feels like War and Peace to me. Just getting it done. It's not like Haunt at all. A lot of people were very like shocked. They're like, this is nothing like Haunt. I'm like, I know. I know. It's nothing like it. But it is my second book, so in that way a follow up, yes.
Now, I mean by publication dates, Haunt is 2011, long form religious porn is 2015. Did you spend those 4 years? Was it a 4 year process to write long form religious porn?
Oh yes. Yes.
So is that the only thing you worked on? Is it just that's your process? It takes that while? Or?
No. During that time, I also worked full time as a teacher and made a movie. So made a feature film. So those took a lot of time too.
So it was just one of those. It keeps going on the back burner. You pull it out when you can and work through it.
Yeah. It basically. It's very hard to, I mean, writing in the most perfect of circumstances is not easy, but you know, when you you have to support yourself in the manner in which you're accustomed when you live in a, you know, Los Angeles, which means, you know, you need like a shack, you need a shack by the river that you can at least call your own. Mm-hmm. So you have to work pretty hard for that. So yeah, I worked full time, and then we were making Boned at the same time. So yeah, it took a long time to get it done.
And it came out in that I know it's not like a relaunch per se at Fungasm Press, but it's sort of their second wave, their big push. You know, you came out with another Violet Lavoie, some Danger Slater, yourself. I think there were like 8 books either.
Autumns came out, yes. Ecstatic Inferno,
yep.
Same time, and Human Furniture. That was we came out as, so it was, there was a mighty posse of us, Fungasm band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like a, like I said, I know I've called it like relaunching a rehash of Fungasm. I've been told that's not correct, but it was just like a new push to reinvigorate everything. Was there since that all came out at the same time, did it just happen to work out that, you know, all that time you spent on it just coincided with that, or did Skip kind of go like, we're gonna be doing this big push and I'm looking for something for you also?
Well, he had told me we had discussed long form for, you know, I had told him I was going to be writing that book and giving it to him 2 years before I did. No, he was expecting it and it just happened to coincide with that time frame.
Interesting. And did you, when that came out and everything, did you find like, the accolades just rolled in because I'm the Wonderland Book of the Year winner for Haunt and everything, so people are just following me? Or did that space of time, like you almost had to refind your audience again?
I don't know. I guess I feel like, I mean, it's, let's see, it came, our official release, the official release of it was in February, mm-hmm. So about a year ago. And I feel like, yeah, I feel like it's still kind of, I feel like it's still kind of just getting its legs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like it's just still, it's still something people are, I think, you know, it's still on people's to read pile.
Yeah, I'm ashamedly, it's been sitting in my to read pile for since February.
You should. The thing that's wonderful about a book, and I mean this with all sincerity, because I really, this is true. The thing that's wonderful about a book is that you don't have to, whenever you read it, it's the right time. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to, there's so many books, like, the world is just rich with them. And it will, you find it, and it finds you at the right time. And if you have a lovely library, a fat to read pile, I mean, it's like being super, you know, it's like having a garden that everything's in bloom. It's wonderful, but, you know, it's there for you whenever you want it. So you'll read it when you're supposed to, and that will be a great day for you.
That's and true. I mean, I got that, you know, there was a big, was it GoFundMe? I forget which site, but there was a big campaign for, like, pre-ordering this new wave of books. And, of course, I, you know, that was in the batch, and I got all in because all those books looked incredible. I've read some of them, but not all of them. And it's just one of those things. It's like you said, I got a pile of books between digital and paperback.
Yeah.
Sometimes you look, like, where do I begin? There's so much great stuff I could go to. And it's almost like a feel, like, right now, all right, I'm feeling this and I'll dig into it. I will obviously get to long form religious porn. I have to read it. Sounds fantastic. It's got great reviews, but, you know, it's I guess it's like you said, it's got to get to that moment where it's the right time to read it.
Yeah, and it's I really love it. Like, I'm very, very happy with the way it turned out. Mm-hmm. And that's a you know, sometimes you like things better than others, but I'm so pleased with what the thing I love about writing novels, and this is not true of many mediums. The thing I love about it is that I won't say it's done until I'm satisfied with it, till I feel that it does what I want it to do. And when you have an idea and you work it and work it and work it and work it, and then you feel like it actually does what you want it to do, it just feels so good to get to share it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy with long form has a lot of different notes. It's got a lot of different moving pieces in it that I was grappling with at the time, and how it all came together for me. I'm really pleased with it. So I hope that, like, I regardless of, you know, I know that it's going to find its people.
And now we have just come up to your latest release is called Angel Meat. It's a bit of a different thing because it's not a novel. It's a story collection.
Yeah.
What made you decide to go?
It's my first story collection.
What made you decide to go in that direction as opposed to another novel?
Well, it takes a long time to write a novel. I don't know. It's gonna take a. Yeah, it's the reason why is I have all of these short stories that have been published in all these different anthologies that I love so very much, and I have this vision of Jim did this Jim Ogpalsa did this beautiful portrait
mm-hmm.
for, and I had this vision of that portrait as the cover of a short story collection, mm-hmm. and I told Skip about it, and then he said, I want that collection. Let me put it together. And then I was like, oh, I'm gonna start working on that now. So it was a collection sort of born of somebody wanted it, and I said, I'm going to make it happen. So I put together all these stories from disparate collections, and then I put and then I wrote an original and stuff that had never been published before, and mm-hmm. and a new one,
mm-hmm.
and it Yeah, and so it's a very eclectic collection.
Is it, would you say, like, each story is, like, it's different from anything else you've written, including, like, Nothing's Like Calling, Nothing's Like Long Form Religious Porn? Is it really all over? Because you seem to have a knack for just not doing the same thing twice, I guess, is sort of how it feels.
Lisa had a really interesting comment about it. She said that one of the things that she found in the collection was a lot that the stories tend to not their resolution. They don't resolve. They're all very different stories, but they all share a similar sort of arc, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I actually don't know. There seems to me to be a very strong through line between all of them and what they have to say and what they are. But I don't know that is something that I would put into words. I think that's something I would say. I would like someone else to say what that is. Hmm. Because to me, the story itself is what it is. Right. I they're a poem to me that I know in how I wrote them, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't want to say how others would receive that. So I liked Lisa saying that they, you know, the thing that she found that connected them. And so I'm interested in other people telling me what they see.
So it wasn't anything like you felt these all had a sort of common, you know, just under the surface sort of theme. You just collected them. But I guess your natural style or whatever it is, that thing underlying it all is going to come out because it's just you.
Yeah, I would say that is accurate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They definitely feel like I arranged in order and put in a specific way, but their through line is definitely something that is more to me harder to pinpoint, like one doesn't know the shape of one's face. Do you know what I mean?
That's, yeah.
So you see yourself in a reflection, or you see yourself in pictures, or you see yourself, you know, but you don't look at your own face when you're talking and see what other people are seeing.
Yeah.
And to me, a lot of the things that connect them, I feel them, but I think that the connection is that they come from my body. they are like pieces of me.
I guess it's kind of cool for you to I guess wait and see what the reaction is, what people take away from it is sort of how it sounds. Is it like that's what you're looking for? What do people see in me out of these stories?
Yes, and that's what I love about writing. I love hearing what people see.
I just put up one of the stupid things I don't normally ever do on Facebook, you know, one of these copy and paste things and everything. But I took it because I thought it'd be interesting to see what the reaction is. And it's sort of like in this spirit is it was basically people who know me know that I love blank, you know. And I normally I just skip it. I'm like, all right, I'll just take that. Let me see what people think that I, you know, what is the image I'm casting out there? And I put that up. And it was interesting to see what, you know, unusual things you would never think of, and they'd come back with these answers like, oh, well, I could see where you come from that. It's like you said, it's what, you know, you see yourself in a mirror, but how other people actually see you, it's that type of thing. That's pretty interesting. I guess that's really applies to any book you put out there and any review and feedback you get on them. It's that.
Yeah. And that's, I think the thing that's so wonderful about creating and sharing what you create, it's a very humbling experience because you, in a way, what you're trying to do is start a conversation. Ultimately, the way in which it's received is beyond your control. Once you put it out there, you control what it is that you create, but then once it's out there, it belongs to everyone else to interpret and see what they see and dialogue with it. But it, it's wonderful when you feel like somebody actually responds and sees what you felt when you were creating it, to get back what you put in and have that dialogue it's humbling. It really is. It, mm-hmm. it feels wonderful and inspiring, but it's so wonderful that somebody has received it.
Yeah. And it's nice. I think, you know, you spend all that time, like you said, in some cases, years sometimes, with yourself, with that book, in your head, in that space of the story, and there's no feedback. It's just you and that space of the story until you put it out there. And then your end of the conversation is done. You
know, exactly.
You can't change that. And then you get the dialogue after the fact. I think it's nice when people get it, and it's also it's incredible when people see things that you never saw yourself. I mean, that's probably the biggest reward is, like, you know, there's those people that don't get it at all. Like, one star, this book stunk. but when somebody gets it and you didn't even see yourself, that's magic right there.
Well, it's funny. My dad, we had we've had some political arguments in the past couple of years, but he's very religious and doesn't swear, and, you know, so the motherfucker on the cover of Haunt was enough to keep my entire family away from reading it. But I basically told him if he would vote for a man who, you know, self-proclaimed himself, you know, who would grab a woman's vagina, that mm-hmm. he would vote for that man, and he should read his daughter's book. No, he agreed with me.
That's a good argument.
He bought my book, and it was very funny because he was reading it and he said, you know, you have good reviews on Amazon, but I don't like this at all. These characters are so unlikable.
Did he take it as a reflection of you, or was he able to separate it? Did he have to separate it?
I said, well, Dad, if you want to go put your one-star review on Amazon, that's fine. You know, like, see my dad's review. This book is terrible.
Well, that's an honest review right there, that's for sure.
It's an honest review of my daughter's work. First of all, she's potty mouth. Second of all...
Well, I think
his
it's nice.
Completely unlikable. He said he thought the writing was very good, but he thought the characters were just, there were no heroes, and, you know, he, mm-hmm. he had problems with that.
Is he himself a regular reader, or did he just, you know, read it really because you gave him that argument and compelled him because you're his daughter?
He is my father is a professor, or he's a retired professor.
Oh, okay.
He teaches sociology, so he has published many, many, many academic books. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a stack of his sociological reviews and things that he's done. But as a reader, he tends to the more nonfiction side of the world. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to read fiction, he likes old school, like, Travis McGee novels. Like, he likes the pulp detective stories from that are, you know, John D. MacDonald. Those mm-hmm. were the things that he was really into.
So reading you is a complete departure for him.
Yes.
But that's awesome. That's awesome that you can do it, because, you know, I've always found it's you would I guess when you're starting out fresh and new and you think everybody is just, at least all my friends and family are going to read my stuff. It's so not the case at all.
Oh, yeah, no. There's... In fact, like, so my family, for the most part, you know, doesn't read it or doesn't like it, mm-hmm. or one or the other. My mom professes to like it. She says there's a lot of swear words, but she says she likes it. My friends, I have some friends who really helped me out, especially at the beginning, you know, saying that how much they loved it. But then I have some friends who they're like, I'm sorry, I don't get it. Don't get it. Love you. Don't get this. and it's a, yeah, but I, that's what's so great too, is being able to, you know, have people who do get it, who you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's.
Well, that's who you're really looking to connect to. I mean, it's nice. I think it's nice that you have friends that do read it and say, like, oh, I just can't do this. Yeah. Because a lot of times you'll get the, oh, you know, it was nice. It was wonderful. And you just know that's disingenuous. They're trying to not hurt your feelings. When I think more often than not, you really do want that. You know, it's not for me. I'm sorry. I don't get it. And so when you do connect with those people you don't know that do get it, that's the stuff right there.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, but I gotta touch on another aspect, which I enjoy seeing of you. You're really big on getting out there, it seems, and doing readings and stuff. And of course you have this thing called the bar crawl, which is brilliant.
Yay!
Can you
I'm obsessed. Yes. Oh, I'm so excited you brought that up. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm all about it. I'm sorry. You can ask your question first before I jump in. And
no, it's fine. Well, tell me about is this like an ongoing thing for you, a promotional thing, the bar crawl? Because obviously you're just using that last name to your benefit and doing the bar crawl, and you know, it's just really a series of reading stuff that you're doing, essentially, correct?
Well, yes, but yes and no. What I've gotten, I've decided that. When I think about things, I try to follow the things that excite me and that get me really, like, you know, the things to pursue at this point are the things that when I think about them make me feel all lit up and excited. So for the past like year or so, this idea has been sparked running around in my head of the reading as a distinct art form. So, you know, I've done a lot of theater. I've done movies. I've done all sorts. I do music. I do all sorts of different stuff. But the reading in and of itself, a lot of time you go to readings and they're very they don't seem like they have a lot of spirit in them. They don't seem to have a lot of juice in them. They don't seem to really ignite the audience. Mm-hmm. And at BizarroCon, the past couple of years, I've been spending a lot of time in the ad house. They have the ad house where people just go in and hang out, and they have a fire there and reading blocks. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have these blocks of readers just reading their writing. And it happens pretty much all day for 2 or 3 days. And some of the readings that I've heard there are just so great. It's so Bizarro authors do readings, of course, differently than everybody else.
Yeah.
So that process of like listening to Bizarro authors read and being part of that, I decided like what I wanted to do was with Angel Meets Release is do readings and different places, but really focus on the distinct art of what the reading is, and how to play with that and make it the most engaging experience to be present for. Because the thing I feel like we, or maybe it's just me, but I feel like as a culture, we really lack being able to just sit with people in a room and hear a story.
Mm-hmm.
And that is primal in us. We need that. We need to be able to have that connection with each other. So, my obsession, I guess, for the next year or so, and it just started in February 11th was the kickoff. So my obsession for the next year or so is to go to different places and try and, get local authors, local bizarros and weird writers together and do a reading and then maybe walk to a bar afterwards and, you know, just connect and try and really focus on the reading itself as a, as an art form. So I have one in San Diego on the 22nd. I'm going to Austin and to Houston. The one in Houston is already set. We're still working on the one in Austin. I'm going to North Carolina and Chicago, and I'm going to the UK. So we have a reading in London at the Big Green Bookstore with and Madeline Swan's going to be part of that, and Chris Meekings, and maybe a few other people, and then Kelso has set up something in Glasgow, so we're going to have one in Scotland, and trying to scare up some in Dublin as well. So I'm doing a UK thing, and the plan is to just keep that going, you know. So if you want to do something there, you let me know.
Wow, that's so exciting! Are you going across the pond specifically for these things, or you just happen to be going there and said let's put some readings together?
Well, my trip to Spain convinced me, you know, that my trip to Spain convinced me that this is what I want to do. Like, I don't want to just go travel to a place and sightsee. That sounds pretty boring. But what I do want to do is connect with a bunch of cool authors and do a reading in different countries. That sounds amazing. Or different cities.
Yeah.
So, the purpose, like, Kelso and I have been friends for a while. I mean, I've never met him, but we've worked together, and, you know, I know him for years. And so we collaborated on a story, and we were talking about it, and I was like, well, let's do a reading, and I want to do a book tour for Angel Meet, and so let's set it up. And so he set up something in Scotland, and I bought a ticket, and then I was like, well, I'm gonna fly to London, let's do something there. And so it's like that. So it's I'm not going to go, I'm going to go because I can do stuff with books. That's why.
Interesting. And what kind of venues do you shoot for when you're doing these reading? It looks like you're hitting bookstores.
The ideal I would be an independent bookstore, because I also, in the same vein for why I think that going to a reading is an important thing to do, I think that independent bookstores are vital for us to have, and to get people in them and to buy books from independent booksellers. I think it's just really important. So my preference is a bookstore, but I think we might have a living room reading in Austin, so that's good too.
No, it's all good as long as people buy. It's funny I ask you, because, you know, I appreciate your passion for wanting to get and do these readings. I agree with you. It's so important. Obviously, storytelling was there before there was writing. So that's, like, as you say, the innate thing in humans to just sit there and listen to stories and tell stories. And I had been looking to, you know, do the same thing, promote my own writing and get together with others. Around me in New Jersey, I've found, and even with independent bookstores, is that they want to charge you like for events and like kind of obscene amounts of money for,
really?
For, yeah. So we've shied away from seeking out those independent places. I don't know if it's just this area of New Jersey, because it's in the metropolitan area, and so they can attract bigger names and make some money off of that. I don't know if that's the situation or not, but what I have found here, we've honed in on, is, and I've seen this across the country, it's probably happening by you, there's these local breweries popping up everywhere, and especially here in New Jersey, there's like every other town, somebody's opening this local brewery thing, and you know, everybody come in, drink local and all that stuff, and we've tapped into that, and coming in April, I have, like, there's going to be four breweries. We're going to get together with four different authors, and we're going to set up shop in these breweries. And it's just like, we're saying, you know, come on down and throw back some beers with us. And not just like, come down and buy our books. It's like, come down and hang out and drink with us, and we'll all hang out. And maybe if you want to buy a book, they'll be there, type of thing. And we found that's working for us. And obviously it's a great opportunity to sit there and just read some crazy horror and whatnot while everybody's sitting around having a couple of brews. I think that's a
wow. A different... That sounds awesome. Yeah. Okay, so sign me up. I can't I'm not kidding. I want to do it. That sounds. And that's what's a better bar crawl than at a bunch of different.
Yeah. Brewers? Yeah, that's how we've sort of worked it. I have a writer friend of mine. He lives down in Jacksonville, Florida. He's from New Jersey, so he's coming up in April, and he's basically what he said. He's like, I'm coming up, so let's put together a bunch of these things. And that's what we've done. We just like started hitting all these breweries up and down, you know, New Jersey, even into New York, because Dan Patavona, I don't know if you're familiar with him, horror writer up in New York. We kind of wanted to hook up with him and hit all these breweries. Some are very all into it. Let's go. And others are just like, I don't know what you're talking about. But like I said, there's so many of these things popping up everywhere that you could just throw stones and eventually you're going to hit people that are into it and will have you in. It's pretty cool. It's a different avenue. And I did one in November and it was a huge success. Half the place was there like to come down and hang out, me and another writer. And so the brewery was totally like, oh, this is awesome. You guys brought in tons of people drinking for us. So we'll have you back anytime. And we sold a bunch of books. I was kind of surprised, like to stand there in the corner of a brewery, you know. But I sold it as just like, dude, just come out and we're going to be hanging out here drinking and there'll be books. And it worked out really well.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. That sounds great. What a great idea.
Yeah. Just hang around drinking. And when you get drunk enough, we'll start selling you books. But yeah, no, it was totally awesome.
You can't read it now because you're too drunk to see it. But when you wake up tomorrow,
yeah, what's this strange book in bed with me? But yeah, now we've really expanded upon that idea. We've put together a, you know, like I said, in April is like 2 week span where we're doing a quote unquote tour, a bar crawl.
That is so great.
Yeah.
That's so great.
So that's why I was asking, you know, about the bookstore thing, because here, like, I kind of try to tap into that, and it's just, it's not that receptive. It's a very money-making thing, at least here in New Jersey. So and it's cool, at least, that there's other places in the world where they're more than happy to have you and kind of promote each other. That's what you would think should happen.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, beer and books have a really wonderful history together, and it's very bizarro. Every year at Bizarro Con, Rose creates mm-hmm. those special beers for the Eraserhead releases.
That's one of the things everybody looks for. Who's going to have the beers this year, and what are they going to be?
That's right.
To the books.
I was healed for a year with my long form religious porn with cider. It was so good.
Yeah, nice. Very nice. And I spoke to... who was I talking to about their beer? Oh, well, I talked to Danger about his beer, but somebody was saying, like, you know, they actually got to, you know, the first time they, I think they had two. Man, I'm so bad that I don't know who this is. But the, like the first year they got one, but they didn't, everybody drank it all. They didn't get to get one, but you know, the last one he had made. Oh, was it, Barbie, David Barbie.
Yay.
Yeah. And he actually got to bring one home with him this time. He was so elated.
Oh, he got to bring one home with him?
That's what he said.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's fancy.
It is pretty fancy. I guess it's probably evolving where everybody's, you know, getting to it. I don't know. Maybe it was just the bottle. Maybe it was just a bottle.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, how did he get it on the plane?
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes where there's a way.
It's Portland.
Oh, my God. Laura, I've had you on longer. You're going to have an extra long episode this week, but you've been a treat to have on, and I hate to cut you off, but, I mean, I don't want to have everybody here all night long.
No.
But, I mean, it's been fantastic talking to you. You are... Like I introduced you, multifaceted, multi-talented. You're an actor too, and doing these movies. It's amazing what you do, and I appreciate you coming on to Bizong this week and sharing all that stuff that you do with us. It's so man, my heart is so warm having talked to you for this.
Oh, that's so wonderful, and I'm serious. I'm coming there.
Yes. Yes.
I'll be right. I'm knocking on your door.
if you land at Newark Airport in April, you hit me up and we'll drag you along on the crawl. The bar, it'll be a true bar crawl. B-A-H-R. For sure. And best of luck to you over in England and everything you're doing. That's so much fun.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been really, really great to be here.
There she is, Ms. Laura Lee Barr. Fantastic interview. Like I said, we went a little longer than usual here on Bazong, but I'm sure you didn't even notice because that, for me, was really a totally engaging, interesting, awesome interview. And interaction, too. I mean, she was great. And she does all those movies, and she's heading out to England to promote her stuff. And she wrote Friggin' Haunt and Long Form Religious Porn and, of course, the latest Angel Meat. How can you go wrong interviewing Ms. Laura Lee Barr? The answer is you can not. Zongers! Don't forget, Project Entertainment Network and Bazong are available for advertising. We are here to advertise yourself, your product, or your wares. The process is very simple. Go to the Project Entertainment Network website. There's an advertising banner along the top. You go there, you follow directions, and we'll get your advertisement going right here on Bazong or any of the other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts. It is just that easy. So consider advertising on the network. We have a big, wide reach. And don't forget, just because you might be paying just for one spot on one show, the shows have long-lasting appeal. And to this day, back episodes get played every month. It's just a constant hit. There's people always checking out episodes of Bazong. So it's not just like you're paying once and you're only getting like a week of hits. It's the gift that keeps giving, for sure. So give the gift of advertising to yourself, your product, or your wares. Also, Zongers, the Project Entertainment Network is and has been fantastic to Bazong. We have a special Patreon contributor stuff specifically for Bazong. There's lots of Bazong swag. And now, to add to the swag, in the Project Entertainment Network store, there are Bazong t-shirts. Yeah, that's right. We got t-shirts now, Zongers. I'm going to admit, they're a little rough looking, right? But, you know, this is Bazong. So that quirky look can definitely work for Zongers. But I promise you, we're working on a new and improved t-shirt design as well. So, you know, this first one that came out, this quirky looking one, we'll call it, it could be a collector's item if you get one of these quirky looking Bazong shirts. So grab one now before the improved shirt comes out. And then you can have both. So it's something else to check out. Hey, walk around. Show everybody that you are a Zonger. And Zonger, since we have gone a little long today, I'm not going to ramble on too much further than that. So you are now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
13 o'clock, the hour of the weird and unexplained. Join your hosts, Jenny Ashford and Tom Ross, as they take you on an entertaining journey through the mysteries of the world and the universe. Paranormal, true crime, conspiracies, unexplained phenomena.
Listen to 13 o'clock on the Project Entertainment Network and find us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at 13 o'clock podcast.
Rated R.
Every person's story has something to teach us, how others view life, how obstacles are overcome, how joy is felt, how fears are faced, how love is expressed. The Matters of Faith podcast explores individual stories of people's lives and how faith plays a part. It may not be your story, but it may help shape yours.
The Matters of Faith podcast with Jay Wilburn is on Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.